allowing the Trump administration to block Medicaid funds to Planned Parenthood while legal challenges play out in the courts. This overturns a federal judge's ruling that Planned Parenthood clinics must continue to be reimbursed for Medicaid funding. Planned Parenthood is the nation's largest abortion provider. It also provides a full range of reproductive health care. Planned Parenthood has said many of its clinics would have to shutter if it loses that funding. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio.
This is Branford Marcellus, and when I'm in the D.C. area, I listen to WPFW.
Escuchando in Washington and all points beyond. This is Oscar Fernandez, and you're listening to the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. El Distrito Colombia here on this Friday, May 30th, 2025. We're also heard on latinomediacollective.com. You can find us on Twitter under the name at LMC underscore show, and of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and today on the show, we put the spotlight on Mexico's corporate media following a racist anti-immigrant ad from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security that ran on Mexico's airwaves last month. Not only did the ad outrage the Mexican public, but also called for a serious examination of the country's telecommunications laws. And so with us on the show today is Kirk Hackbarth. He's a writer, playwright, and freelance journalist. He's also the host of the Sobranía podcast that you can find on YouTube. Welcome back to the show, Kirk Hackbarth.
Thank you very much, Oscar. And I think since the last time I've been on, I'm now on Mexico's public broadcaster, Channel 11, Canal Ponce, with a program there on the U.S.-Mexico relationship called Sin Muros, or Without Walls, which we're very happy about.
Oh, really? Fantastic. Well, that sort of lends itself to the importance of this conversation today.
Indeed.
Because there's a lot to discuss about the corporate media structure in Mexico and how it compares or maybe contrasts to the U.S. model. However, let's begin with the controversy that I mentioned at the beginning of the show, which brought us to this conversation, which is a Trump ad featuring Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem that ran on media giant Televisa and other outlets last April. So let's take a listen.
I'm Kristi Noem, the United States Secretary of Homeland Security. Thank you, President Donald J. Trump, for securing our border and putting America first. Let me deliver a message from President Trump to the world. If you are considering entering America illegally, don't even think about it. Let me be clear. If you come to our country and you break our laws, we will hunt you down. Criminals are not welcome in the United States. For too long, weak leadership has left our borders wide open, flooding our communities with drugs, human trafficking, and violent criminals. Well, those days are over. Under President Trump, we are defending American families and restoring their safety. If you try to enter illegally, you will be caught. You will be removed, and you will never return. Follow the law, and you'll find opportunity. If you break it, you'll find consequences. Strong borders mean a stronger America. President Trump is making America safe again.
So that was the North Korea style ad from DHS that aired on Mexico's airwaves last month, which also featured a lot of racist and xenophobic imagery in the process. So I know that you've discussed this on your podcast, Soberania, which again, I encourage everyone to check out, but it deserves another conversation today because this is also the same Kristi Noem who we discovered doesn't know what habeas corpus is. So while she's wagging her finger telling people to follow the law, she doesn't know the very laws that she's supposed to enforce. So where do we begin to process the moral bankruptcy of Mexican media outlets like Televisa, and there are others, running this ad in Mexico last month?
Well, this is a big and very important topic, Oscar. Yeah, so that ad we just heard, which was full of racist imagery and tropes, the idea of Mexicans in particular, or immigrants in general, as criminals, that terrible imagery that is used to demean immigrants, was broadcast on Mexican television screens in prime time during an important soccer match. And you know how important soccer is in Mexico and the rest of Latin America. So, you know, when they knew it was going to get primetime viewership. And then the very next day, when the Pope passed away, also huge viewership, there it was again. And not only that, Oscar, but you can't turn on YouTube in Mexico or, you know, find something on your phone here without seeing that ad again. And again. And again. And again. I mean, they have blitzed Mexican airwaves with that. But the real offender here is Televisa. Televisa is one of two private television networks that dominate, you know, Mexico's broadcast landscape, right? There's Televisa and there's TV Azteca, right? TV Azteca used to be a public station that was privatized in the wave of privatizations over the last generation. Televisa is, you know, a giant, right? And has recently fused with Univision in the United States, right?
Yes.
To, you know, bring their garbage messages to Latino audiences in the U.S. as well. So it's a cross-border monster, this thing, right? And that's why this is so important, actually, because it affects people both in Mexico and on the U.S. side, Oscar.
I did not know that part about how it's on YouTube and on people's phones.
Everywhere. In Mexico. Everywhere. You can't get away from that ad, right? We call her the Mataperros down here, right? The dog killer, right? She killed her own dog in a ditch. And then she's, you know, peddling these racist tropes, right? On Mexican television, paid for with millions of dollars in U.S. taxpayer money, right? And then, as you said, she has this willful ignorance about what habeas corpus is. She said habeas corpus is the right for the president to expel people. That's not what habeas corpus is. But here's the crux of the matter, and this is what's really, really important. Televisa and TV Azteca are beneficiaries of a public good, and that public good is the public bandwidth, which is used to broadcast radio and television. That's a public good, as, you know, as public as water or, you know, any other genuinely public good. But what happens is Televisa and TV Azteca have benefited from governmental largesse and previous administrations and have gotten these long licenses to then, you know, use this public good of the bandwidth to do whatever they want with it, to do absolutely whatever they want with it, which that means, you know, soap operas with, you know, right-wing political messages or these kind of commercials by Kristi Noem, you know, what have you. And what is important to underscore here is that you mentioned Bernardo Gomez at the outset of this program. He's the acting president now of Televisa, right? Because the family heir to the Televisa channel, Oscar Agajan, has been forced to step aside temporarily because of the FIFA scandal with regards to...
Really?
Yeah. Well, we can go into that all the time, but Oscar had to step aside because of the FIFA scandal. So Bernardo Gomez is now, right, acting president. Big Trumper. Trump loves him. He had a front row seat at the inauguration. Claudia Sheinbaum, the Mexican president, wasn't invited, but Bernardo Gomez was, to all of the inauguration events. The night that Trump won in November, one of the few calls he placed was to Bernardo Gomez. Why? Because Trump knows television. And just as Fox News has been used to, you know, sway elections in the U.S., Trump wanted to do the same thing with the Latino vote through Univision, which is now part of the Televisa empire. So basically, it was a call to Bernardo Gomez saying, thank you for helping me increase the Latino vote in this election, because the Latino vote for Trump was up So mutual back scratching there. And then, you know, part of the payback is you got to put this ad on. You got to put this ad on Mexican television. And they very dutifully did.
We did a whole show late last year on these Univision town halls that they did in the lead up to the elections last year. And also we criticized Univision here for that cozy interview that they did with Trump late last year towards the eve of the election in November. And so this is not new territory for Televisa now that it's merged with Univision. And one of the things I learned about Bernardo Gomez in doing my research here for this program is that, you know, his name pops up in news articles with regards not only to Trump, but also Jared Kushner as well. And I want to go back to the ad that we discussed with regards to Homeland Security running this racist ad on Mexican airwaves, because the temerity of running an ad, and this is something that you mentioned on your podcast, an ad that demeans the very public that you're supposed to be serving is profoundly bankrupt in a number of ways. I don't know if this is a fair comparison, but can we make a comparison here between Bernardo Gomez and Televisa with, in my opinion, Robert Unanue and Goya? Sort of how similar characters in regards to how they sort of demean the very audience or very clients that they're supposed to be serving here. Because again, it's been a month now. I'm still amazed that an ad like that would run on Mexico.
Can you imagine NBC, CBS, ABC, or CNN running an ad from the Chinese government that demeans U.S. citizens or any foreign government? But this is what Televisa did. It ran an ad from a foreign government which, by the way, is threatening to invade Mexico, on Mexican television during prime time, demeaning the very Mexican public. I mean, just put our heads all around that. But if you know the history of Televisa, you know that that's not beyond the pale for them, right? The big magnate of Televisa, Oscar Gajan's forefathers there, said in the 90s, right, Mexico is a country full of jodidos, he used the word, kind of screwed over people, poor, you know, it's a derogatory term, who will never escape from being jodidos. So Televisa needs to provide them with basically cheap entertainment in the form of soap operas and soccer, because that's all they have in their very sad lives. This was a Televisa executive demeaning the Mexican public in that way, quite openly. Quite openly. Back in the day when Televisa was very allied with the PRI party, which was the one party, you know, the one party state that ruled Mexico from 1929 until 2000. Televisa was fundamental in that endeavor. Fundamental in that endeavor. In consistently alienating the Mexican public through trash content, political meddling, right? And then manipulating the legislative system to continue to have, you know, regulatory situation in their favor, which is why now the government of Claudia Sheinbaum is trying to change the telecommunications laws, and which is why Televisa and TV Azteca are so up in arms about that. So it's, you know, you see these things in the past, right? They put that Kristi Noem ad during a soccer game. Oscar Gajan has had to step aside for that FIFA scandal because, you know, the accusation is that they used bribes and illicit operations to get the World Cup coverage for Televisa for a series of years, right? So it all cycles around, right? For 2018, 2022, 26, and 2030, right? Bribes, right? Which is certainly not unusual in FIFA land, but it all comes around to that, right? You have to keep the public sedated through soccer and soap operas, while behind the scenes we're manipulating things politically in our favor.
I'll take it a step further. There's a fantastic book called Muy Buenas Noches by Celeste González de Bustamante that examines the history of Televisa's cozy relationship with the pre-government as far back as the 1950s.
Oh, great.
As you mentioned, all the way to the days of Jacobo Zabludovsky.
Right, the big anchor.
Yeah. So this is interesting for an American audience because at first glance, it would seem like Televisa is a Spanish version of Fox News. However, considering its history of whitewashing some of the darkest moments of the police history, could it be argued that Fox News is really the English version of Televisa here, considering it has a more extensive history compared to Fox News?
I would agree with that. Televisa was first. It was much earlier than Fox. It was actually one of the first television stations. Did you say it goes back to the 50s? It was one of the first to put a satellite out in space. One thing you have to say about the Azcárraga family, they were very Machiavellian, but they were also very forward-thinking with regards to television. They got into this very early on, right? And created an empire that stretched beyond, a media empire that stretched beyond Mexico. So, yeah, I would say Fox is the Televisa rather than the other way around. Yep.
Yeah, and you probably know this a lot better than I do, but all this history, this dark history regards to Televisa is not something way out in the past from the 50s and 60s alone. As recently as, for example, May of 2012, there were thousands, I think 20,000 Mexicans who took to the streets in Mexico City, converging on the offices of Grupo Televisa in response or in protest of sort of their lack of coverage of other political parties during that time period. And so this is just another example here of Televisa's long history here. Now,
yeah, just to comment on that quickly, because that's important. Those protests in 2012 were part of a wave of student-inspired protests called Yo Soy 132,
yes,
which is a protest by students based on a visit by then-presidential candidate Enrique Peña Nieto to the Ibero University, right? When they're saying, oh, it was just a handful of protesters and those other students. Saying, no, there were more of us. I'm this number, right? When Peña Nieto ran and hid in the bathroom. I mentioned Peña Nieto because he was the Frankenstein creation of Televisa. He was the governor of Mexico State at the time, and they built him up, this frivolous authoritarian politician, into a national statesman through Televisa, right? He married a soap opera star. They put that wedding on television. They built him up, and they turned him into a presidential figure. Wouldn't have happened without Televisa. In that sense, it was very pre-Trumpian too, right? Remember in 2015 when they were broadcasting Trump's open podium, right? I mean, they were giving Trump all that bonus extra coverage, right? Televisa already had perfected that with Peña Nieto. That's what I said. Televisa is before the curve on a lot of these things.
Absolutely. And now that you mentioned Enrique Peña Nieto, going back to the controversy of this ad running on Mexican airwaves, can you tell us about Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum's attempt to revamp the country's telecommunications laws and how these outdated regulations tied to the administration of Enrique Peña Nieto? You've given me a few examples here, but can you give more details on how this ties to Peña Nieto's administration at the time?
It's a big package, this telecommunications reform. One of the big tenets of the reform is it changes the rules and how licenses are given for radio and television. Before, it used to be based on basically financial power. Basically, you have the financial wherewithal to be able to use the license. But they're changing the rules for that now, so that if you want to be a licensee, you have to take into account extending coverage to places where they don't exist. It's what's called cobertura social. They're increasing, you know, educational and public spaces for broadcasting on television. So they're making it so that if you want to get a license to broadcast, you have to take into account larger populations and reaching those populations. You can't just, you know, broadcast in wealthy pockets or whatever, or for certain audiences. So that's important. It bans private governments running ads like the Kriske Noem ad on Mexican airwaves. It just bans that, which was the case until 2013 when it was liberalized. So that was the case through most of the time in Mexico. History, and it makes obvious sense, right? You have a foreign government running ads against your own country on your own airwaves. And this is when they start crying censorship. It's like, oh, yes, of course, the United States should be able to demean us on our own airwaves, right? And this is when the conversation starts getting a little silly, right? Because it's a common sense thing. Any country would do that, right? So that's one of them. Another one is, we were talking about this just at the beginning, or just before the show, is it levels the playing field somewhat with community radio, which has been very difficult endeavor in Mexico to run small on community radio, in part because they've never been allowed to run ads, so they've never been able to generate revenue. So a lot of times they're running with these shoestring budgets. And then on top of that, they've suffered governmental repression for many decades, back in the time when they were practically the only voice of the opposition, back when Televisa ran the show completely, right? So they had these little pockets of community radio, sometimes having to run around and hide their transmitters, you know, indigenous communities and indigenous language radio and all of these things. So now they're going to be able to run ads, not commercial ads, but local ads. They're going to be able to generate revenue. They're going to be able to basically facilitate in a number of different ways community radio's ability to broadcast, seeing them as in the public interest. So, you know, in general, what it's trying to do is to reorient telecommunications in Mexico in a social direction, stop foreign government interference, improving the licensing situation, making things better for community radio. And all of this is obviously a threat to Televisa and Televisteca and other interests behind them, which is why they're crying censorship.
I don't want to leave TV Azteca out of this conversation here, because while Televisa has a long, dark history, TV Azteca has its own dark history in a different way. But the underlying thing with both of those companies is greed. That's not right. Only greed, but from your Soberanía podcast, I also get the impression that along with the greed is a certain degree of desperation as well, because people are not watching traditional television the same way that they used to. And so one of the reasons this ad was run on Mexican airwaves is because of money, the need for money and the desperation for money, because they're not making the same revenues as they used to, correct?
That's absolutely right. Yeah, very good point. Televisa, we talked about the FIFA scandal. We talked about declining viewerships, right? Yeah. Televisa's stock is down. Televisa's profits are down. Younger generations aren't watching television as much, and much less would they be, you know, spending time watching Televisa. All right. The same situation with TV Azteca. TV Azteca was the public station Imevisión before it was privatized. It was bought by the magnate Ricardo Salinas Pliego of the Electra stores.
Sure.
But Salinas Pliego is... his whole business enterprise is in crisis. It's in crisis in the United States and the U.S. stock market. I think it's taken off the stock market. He owes a cool $3 billion in back taxes in Mexico, which he refuses to pay. Nice chunk of change there, right? And actually, there's going to be a judicial election this coming Sunday where Mexico is going to elect its judges. And interestingly, it's been the judicial branch that has protected people like Salinas Pliego so that he hasn't had to pay those back taxes. So, yeah, Televisa and Televisteca, they're both, for different reasons, in crisis. And, of course, Televisa was very happy to get a lot of money from the U.S. taxpayer to run those ads at a pretty critical time for them.
Absolutely. And I just want to say here, just to give a greater sense of urgency to this conversation that we have here, is that at the very least, there is some degree of a democratic conversation here with regards to re-examining the telecommunications laws in Mexico. We can't say the same thing about other countries in Latin America. Even as we have this conversation right now, the authoritarian presidency of Nayib Bukele in El Salvador is seeking to arrest journalists from the publication El Faro, among other things that he's done. Even in places like Peru, for example, one company owns up to 90% of all the television stations, radio stations, newspaper, and magazine publications in one country, Peru, which is much bigger than El Salvador. And going back to the ad that brought us to this conversation, that ad by Kristi Noem is not her first racist publicity stunt either. We'll remember the infamous Secat video that's also gone viral that DHS did, where Kristi Noem is behind a group of prisoners. So I just want to bring that up for you, just to give people a greater sense of urgency in understanding of why these laws need to be changed, correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that Secot video was just horrific, because she was standing in front of the bars of, you know, I even hesitate to call them inmates. They're political prisoners. They're kidnapped.
Yeah.
They're not prisoners in any real sense of the word. You know, these are people who were sequestered out of the United States with no due process, with no criminal charges against them, due to rumors, for example, in the case of the Venezuelans, that they belonged to Tren de Aragua, the criminal group with no proof. or in the case of, we know the very famous case of Abrigo Garcia and others, right? So this is just a renditioning system where these people are sent to these Bukele gulags when they could just disappear into there forever,
right?
No due process, no clarification of their cases. And then Kristi Noem goes down there and poses in front of them in one of her various outfits because she loves changing into different outfits to do her cosplay of, the cabinet official, being tough on the border. It's disgusting in any number of ways, the whole Seiko thing.
Yeah, we did a whole show on this, and I would encourage everyone to go to latinomediacollective.com to listen to that conversation I did with Professor Jorge Cuellar about this as well. So we're going to take a break right here. We're speaking with Kurt Hackmarth, who's a writer, playwright, and freelance journalist, and the host of the Sobrania podcast. I forgot to mention that he also writes for Jacobin magazine. His most recent article is entitled Assessing AMLO, the Presidential Years. This is the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. We're going to take a quick break right here. Back with more in a minute. Stay tuned. Was Manu Chao, and you're listening to the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. Reminding everyone, you can follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can also follow us on Twitter under the name at @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and we're speaking about Mexico's corporate media with Kurt Hackbarth, who's a writer, playwright, freelance journalist, and the host of the Sobrania podcast. So, Kurt, as an interesting sidebar here, we mentioned Univision and their merger with Televisa.
Right.
And so I have to point out Fox News here for a moment, because one of the biggest criticisms of Fox News is that it's pretty much a Fox News to Trump pipeline when it comes to personalities that appear on television, on Fox News, they end up getting cabinet positions, whether it be this Trump administration or any other Republican administration. And I just did a show last week on Venezuela demystifying the whole thing of Tren de Aragua and the whole false narrative of that.
Right.
And it occurred to me that to a certain degree, Univision kind of has that same thing as well. Not to the same degree as Fox News, because one character that came up was Maria Elvira Salazar, the representative for Florida, who got her start in Univision and who has been on an anti-Venezuela crusade in her time in office. And she's not alone there. I think the Diaz-Balart family got their start in Univision as well. And you sort of get the idea that I'm trying to convey here with regards to personalities, whether it be in Univision or now this Televisa-Univision merger, who will espouse right-wing views and then find their way in political office. We saw that with the, I guess to a certain degree, with the cozy interview that Univision did with Trump late last year. But is that a fair assessment to make on my part here?
No, that's a very fair assessment there. Univision is very much running a Fox News kind of model there. It's not as direct, people going direct to the cabinet like they do from Fox. But, you know, that Salazar example is a good one, right? You know, in Mexico, we're very familiar with Jorge Ramos, for example, coming down to AMLO's mañaneras and grandstanding, swooping in with his Univision credit, supposedly, and then swooping back out, right? Leon Krause, you know, the son of the very conservative AMLO opponent, Enrique Krause, right, became the anchor at Univision. So it's very much, there's very much, how do you say, porousness about the whole thing where people from the Mexican elite go to Univision and then come back trying to build off their, you know, Univision cred and vice versa. Just like there's a connection between the Mexican elite and the U.S. elite through think tanks, through supposedly nonpartisan academic institutions, you know, like the Baker Institute at Rice University or the Wilson Center, right, where, you know, they kind of hone talking points or they kind of bounce arguments back off, you know, each other, right? For example, this idea that it's a narco government or narco AMLO, that was inserted into the Mexican media bloodstream through the Baker Institute in their Mexico report, based on no evidence whatsoever. So Univision is another way to kind of create a bridge between Mexican elites and the U.S., right, for right-wing purposes. The right wing is very good at organizing internationally, better than the left, I just, unfortunately.
Yeah. I'll say this. I am not a fan of Jorge Ramos. You could YouTube his interview with Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela several years ago. Is, as you would imagine, a hostile interview, to say the least. And then compare that to Jorge Ramos's interview with Juan Orlando Hernandez from Honduras several years ago, and right, how cozy that conversation was. Juan Orlando Hernandez is currently in prison, in U.S. prison, for drug trafficking and essentially turning Honduras into a narco state. So that's just food for thought and another example to what you just mentioned here. So, you know what? At the very least, whether there is a change with the telecommunications laws in Mexico or not, at least there's a conversation. At the very least, there's a conversation. Because, again, what brought us here is this racist ad that you heard the audio. And would that happen here? Not only does it happen here, it's normalized. Over the years, CNN and MSNBC have run ads by organizations like Numbers USA, Center for Immigration Studies, Immigration Reform Law Institute, Fair Immigration. All these organizations that I just mentioned are considered hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Yeah. But there's no conversation in U.S. media to say, why are we taking money to run these ads in the U.S. airwaves? So again, this lends itself to the urgency of, at the very least, having this conversation in Mexico as to why these ads are being run when we know that they're coming from a place of hate, racism, and xenophobia.
Right. And let's not forget that the United States had a thing called the Fairness Doctrine from 1949 to 1987, right, that required the holders of broadcast licenses to present issues in a way that reflected differing viewpoints. Ronald Reagan got rid of that. And that really opened the door to the media landscape that our generation knows, right? That was a huge deal.
Right.
So telecommunications is so important. Sometimes it seems like a very arcane part of law, right? How telecommunications are run. No, it's vital. On that depends what you see on your screens, what you hear on the radio, how things are presented, who's invited, you know, like you mentioned the hate groups before. And that's why it's so important that Mexico's having this conversation right now. And I think the telecommunications law will pass. Sheinbaum has said that she wants a special session to be called to pass telecommunications law. Obviously, Televisa and Azteca still have, you know, their power and their lobbyists and their Congress people in their pocket,
right?
But the Morena Progressive Party has 2/3 majorities now in both houses of Congress. So they have no excuse not to pass it. They'd better pass it. And I think that opens also, Oscar, a larger question as to how progressive governments can handle a hostile media landscape, because it's always hostile, you know? We saw what they did in the global north to figures like Corbyn and Sanders. But in Latin America, my God, it's just brutal what they do to anyone who's even just an inch to the left of center. So what López Obrador managed to do through his Mañanera morning press conference was quite extraordinary. A morning press conference of 2 to 3 hours where he'd simply go over the heads of these media and have his own direct contact with, you know, reporters, questioners, some friendly, some hostile, even Jorge Ramos would show up, and have this daily session that people would watch on YouTube and Spotify and everywhere. And he became one of the top YouTubers in the Spanish language world. A 70-year-old president became a top streamer and a top YouTuber, beating out like 25-year-olds,
right?
Through the phenomenon of the Mañanera, which Claudia Sheinbaum has wisely decided to continue. But I think she realized what, you know, also correctly, you can't base an entire media strategy on a morning press conference. There has to be a level playing field with regards to how radio and television is handled, hence this law.
Imagine how popular Jose Mujica from Uruguay would have been if he had a podcast, who recently passed away, I believe, right, last month. So just food for thought there. And hopefully this does pass. But as you know, this won't pass without any degree of opposition, especially from corporate media. And so one thing that has come up, especially in English media, you know, whether it be publications or on CNN or MSNBC or otherwise, is sort of this misunderstanding or conflation, shall we say, of these challenges to these laws with freedom of speech and censorship. So I wonder if you could sort of break this down, because there is this attempt by corporate media outlets like TV Azteca and Televisa to try to say the Sheinbaum government is trying to take away our freedom of speech. They're trying to censor us. What do you say to that? I guess playing as a devil's advocate here, because I've seen this in equal parts in Spanish-speaking media and in English-speaking media. We need to break down the fact versus fiction here.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. They've cried wolf in Mexico so many times over the years now that you really, it's hard to believe them anymore, you know? I mean, I never believed them in the first place, but I mean, it becomes really repetitive, right? Mexico was entering an authoritarian phase when AMLO was elected. And then it was entering an authoritarian phase when they wanted to reform the electoral system. Then it was entering an authoritarian phase when they wanted to reform the electoral institute. Then the judicial reform. They've cried wolf so many times on these things. The telecommunications reform is a bill to level the playing field and to begin to broaden the definition of requirements necessary to become a licensee, which is a big responsibility because you're dealing with the public good, which is the public bandwidth.
Okay.
So no, it's not censorship. There was one clause in there which they particularly hobbled to the meme about, which would allow the government to temporarily shut down a transmitter for, you know, not obeying regulations and, you know, paying their taxes and all this stuff. That has actually already exists in other laws. So I think they took that out of the telecommunications law because it was redundant anyway. Besides that, Televisa and TV Azteca are so used to having their own way and being able to pass whatever they want, which is why they've managed to have their monopoly position for so long, because it's almost impossible to start a new television station in this country. Virtually impossible. It was virtually impossible for a community radio station to get, you know, to transmit any farther than a small pueblo. And that was on purpose. That was by design. That's not a natural state of affairs. It was made that way. It was made that way so that you'd have a private control of the means of communication and also the means of information. And that was a state of affairs that they intended that should always be that way. So, of course, they don't like the possibility of having to open it to other media, not only, you know, social media, which is already eaten into their, you know, viewership, but other actual, you know, competitors in their own sphere. They hate the idea.
And now with the modern means of communications, much like the way we're doing this conversation today, they seem even more desperate to hold on to their power because, as you said earlier, the revenues are going down, the audience, the viewership is going down, among other things. Now, allow me for a moment here to steal or plagiarize from your show, Sovranija, and because you have a segment on your podcast called Losers and Haters. So allow me to borrow your segment.
That was one of our viewers who suggested
that. Fantastic.
That was an interesting idea. You know?
So allow me to borrow your segment by highlighting Canadian TV producer Rob Warsop, who this month has peddled the idea, along with the Department of Homeland Security, of developing a game show where immigrants compete for U.S. citizenship. And you could put in whatever Hunger Games joke you want to put here. But this is not a joke. They're seriously considering this. This is the same producer who created Duck Dynasty, Millionaire, Matchmaker, and various other trashy TV shows that I imagine you could find on TV Azteca and Televisa right now. In fact, here is Rob Warsop justifying his proposal in a CNN interview. Let's take a listen.
What are the stakes? How does this work? If you lose, what happens? And if you win, what happens?
Nobody moves backwards in this process. Everybody on our show is going to be a future American. They are all great candidates to be future Americans. They're all at some place in the process and somewhere in line, just like I was. Sometimes you have to wait like years, 2 years to get somebody to just look at your file. I'm offering the chance to skip to the front of the line. It's not the Hunger Games, that it's not some mean-spirited thing that's trying to deport people. It's exactly the opposite of that. I'm very fortunate and lucky and honored to be an American, and I want everybody to understand the process. By the way, most Americans can't pass a basic civics test, and I want to bring people born in America to face off against our future Americans and see how well they would do, because guess what? Most people can't.
Okay, first of all, you know who needs a civics test? Christy Noem, who didn't know what habeas
corpus was.
Yeah. So, oh, good Lord. So, two questions come to mind from this absurd, insane idea, which, again, compared to the Hunger Games, it is the Hunger Games. One, where do we begin to process the moral bankruptcy and U.S. exceptionalism from this idea? And two, considering everything we've discussed thus far, is it beyond the realm of possibility that corporate media giants like the ones that we described in Mexico wouldn't run something like that in Mexico? I mean, sorry, my blood's boiling a little bit around this issue because
understandable.
My goodness.
Yeah. You know, I first saw the rumor of that, a show like that, in the Daily Mail, which is a tabloid, so I didn't know whether to believe it. And then that news was picked up by the Wall Street Journal. So it's grotesquely interesting to hear that clip that you just played now. Yeah, is this the state of degradation we've gotten to now? Is that where we are? Yes. I mean, these are the things we discuss on our Sin Muros program all the time, right? For example, the new U.S. ambassador to Mexico is very openly a former Green Beret and CIA spook. CIA, you know, spy, who spent his first day in Mexico having dinner with a far-right political figure, a ridiculous far-right political figure, but anyway, called Eduardo Verástegui, a former actor, right? In a very blatant attempt to meddle in Mexico's internal affairs. They're not even trying to fight these things anymore. You would think that an ambassador on their first day on the job would not be meeting with far-right political figures and calling them my brother, mi hermano. But that's what Ron Johnson did on his first day in Mexico. Right? Just out there in the open. It's like they don't care anymore. The degradation has gotten to that point, right? You see what's going on in Gaza. I mean, just the whole idea of Western law, liberal institutions and international law, you know, it's also degraded. So, you know, what's the logical extension of that? Pitting immigrants each other in a Hunger Games scenario. That's where we are. Would that appear on Mexican television? People would riot down here if they did that. People would riot. If people were angry enough about the Christy Noem ads, they would break down the doors of Televisa if anything like that were to go on the air down here.
It's insanity. And I hope you notice the irony of a Canadian TV producer espousing U.S. exceptionalism in the course of justifying this absurd idea. I mean, that component of what we heard sound to me, as a Salvadoran, very Nayib Bukele-like.
Bukele-esque, yeah.
Yeah, seriously. And speaking of the Daily Mail, much like yourself, I don't consider it to be a reputable, you know, magazine or publication. It is a tabloid, as you mentioned. But I did see the same article that you mentioned, and they did pull up some clips from this presentation that I found absurd. So, for example, it said that each episode will feature, quote, a heritage challenge. I don't know what that means. An elimination challenge. Afraid to know what that means. Town hall meeting. A final vote. It's all absurd and insane. And again, at least in Mexico, there's a conversation to try not to run something like that in Mexico. In the U.S., it's not even a conversation at all whatsoever. The fact that DHS is even considering this, and the fact that the deputy spokesperson for DHS also went on CNN and said something to the effect that we're looking into it. We get proposals like these all the time. All the time.
Yeah, didn't deny it. Didn't fully deny it. No, it's true.
No, absolutely not. So one thing that I want to stress as we have this conversation, and you sort of alluded to it already, is the importance of independent media outlets, whether it be in Mexico or in the United States. You mentioned Canal 11, and a lot of what we discuss here, a lot of it has this component of a David versus Goliath type of thing. The Goliath, of course, being the Televisas and the TV Aztecas of the world against independent media outlets, whether it be Canal 11 or here on WPFW. Tell me about this project again that you have just started with Canal 11, if you will, just as an example of the importance of changing these laws for the benefit of not only independent media outlets, but for the general public in Mexico as well.
Yeah, sure. So Canal 11 has been around for a long time. It was attached to the Politécnico here in Mexico City, goes back to the 60s, and I think is the largest or one of the largest public broadcasters in Latin America. But, you know, it was filled up with a lot of the same conservative voices that you were seeing on, you know, Televisa and TV Azteca, exactly. So the new director, Renata Turrent, you know, came in with the Sheinbaum administration and really has a vision of using the public broadcaster for what it's supposed to be, which is to broaden the debate and to bring other voices on that wouldn't be on private channels ever. Yeah. Can you imagine Noam Chomsky ever having gone on ABC or CBS? Never. NBC? Chomsky's pieces were distributed by the New York Times syndicate, but was never in the New York Times. That's what happens when you have, just one example of many, private companies dominating and deciding who goes on and who doesn't. So Renata had this idea that public broadcasting should be in the public interest. We need to broaden the debate. We need to have new voices, new opportunities, new ideas. So I presented this project for a show that talked about Mexico, but was geared towards the Mexican diaspora in the United States, the 37 million people in the United States of Mexican descent. And not only Mexican descent, but because it's a Mexican broadcaster, that was, you know, kind of a primary target. So that was how the idea was born of a show called Sin Muros, Without Walls, where we discuss issues related to the U.S.-Mexico bilateral relationship and all of the aspects,
right?
And also deal with issues of interest to the migrant community in the United States, which is what we think a public broadcaster should be doing. So we start the show with three news pieces because there are three of us, three co-anchors, and then we go into the analysis section. We also have a culture section where we highlight different artists related to the migrant community in different ways. And we have a good time. We enjoy ourselves, which is what you should be doing at broadcasting. And the show started on Canal 11's digital webpage, and we've done well enough that we're now on the channel itself on open television. So we're really happy about it. We really have a very strong debate. We do analysis. We do the kind of analysis that we're doing here without censorship, you know, and saying the kind of things that you wouldn't see on television ever. or TV Azteca ever, or U.S. television ever. And that's what we think public television should be doing, right? When we talk about the migrant debate, we also talk about the history of U.S. interventionism in Latin America, for example, right? We also talk about U.S. weaponry flooding Mexico. We talk about those uncomfortable things. And the public has rewarded us with it, with their viewership. So, you know, for now, we're going to be still going.
We're almost out of time here, but I just want to say this, that for the English-speaking audience here on WPFW, since the very inception of the Latino Media Collective, I've always made the argument that the same grievances and arguments that we have with English corporate media here in the United States, we could easily make the same argument on Spanish-speaking corporate media as well. Cases like Univision and Telemundo, which we haven't mentioned during the course of this conversation, who are equally as nefarious, especially since they're owned by NBC, which was one of the profiteers along with General Electric during the Iraq War back in 2003, 2004.
Right.
We should also mention them as well. One thing that I want to point out here, and it's something that's often discussed here when we have conversations like these, is that capitalist structures like Televisa, like TV Azteca, are not agents for social change and certainly not informers of social justice as well. And one striking example of that is the case of Ayotzinapa back in 2014. Because when we've covered the case of Ayotzinapa here in the show in the past 11 years, we've never cited TV Azteca or Televisa. It's through independent journalists and journalism outlets in Mexico that have done the hard-hitting reporting. In fact, you'll find less likely sources citing those two outlets, Televisa and TV Azteca. And the same can be said to what you mentioned earlier, which is the Yo Soy 132 movement in 2012 as well. And so I just want to end that as other examples to the importance of independent media outlets and the importance of changing these telecommunications laws that, as you just mentioned, hopefully they will pass.
Yeah, those two cases that you mentioned are very important and symptomatic of a problem with Mexican corporate journalism, that they tend to follow the lead of what U.S. corporate journalism considers to be important. So if something is in U.S. corporate media, they will parrot it, all right? If it isn't, then they won't. Just as an example, you know, the DEA has been pushing to have more freedom of operations in Mexico because López Obrador limited their actions in Mexico through his national security law. And then the DEA has been leaking against López Obrador and Sheinbaum ever since. Obviously, there have been all sorts of scandals of the DEA, all sorts of scandals, never mentioned in Mexican media, never mentioned in Mexican media, right? Because they're hardly mentioned in U.S. media. And if the Mexican public were informed as to how many scandals there have been with DEA agents, they'd have a much different perception of what the DEA is and why it's important to limit what the DEA does on Mexican territory. But if they don't have that information, then they're not going to know. This is just one of many, many examples of that, right? There was a case of a CIA agent who had been stationed at the U.S. embassy for a few years in Mexico, and he was sexually assaulting women. He sexually assaulted some 30 Mexican women before he was finally captured when a woman ran out naked on his balcony. And then he was whisked out of the country because he had diplomatic privilege. That was totally hushed up down here. Totally hushed up. When you think that that would have been a big story, but it wasn't because it wasn't a big story in U.S. media, right? And so this happens again and again and again. His name was Brian Jeffrey Raymond. He was finally sentenced in the U.S., finally. But you'd think the Mexican media would have investigated, would have talked to these women who were sexually assaulted by the CIA agent. No. And this is what happens when you don't have independent media, you know, doing that kind of work. Those stories just disappear.
This is precisely why I wanted to have you on the show. And hopefully you'll continue the great work on the Soberania podcast as well, to shed the light on those type of stories, among the other things that we discussed during the course of this conversation. And so with that said, we've been speaking with Kurt Hackmarth. He's a writer, playwright, freelance journalist, and the host of the Soberania podcast. Kurt, it's been fun, insightful, informative. Thank you very much for being on the show with us.
Thanks very much, Oscar. And just very quickly, if people are interested in going to see C-Moodles, our show, you can see it on the Canal 11 YouTube channel, and there are English subtitles for them as well. My podcast and C-Moodles co-host Luis Camilo Ceja does a lot of work to get those subtitles in English ready. So you can watch the episodes in English as well if you're interested.
Even better. And with that said, that is it for today's show. We want to remind everyone you can follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can also follow us on Twitter and then the name at @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez saying thank you very much. That's it for today's show.
For WPFW News in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. A United Nations vote today supported the ending of the Gaza war, as well as an independent state of Palestine. WPFW's Noah Portner has more.
Just today, the UN General Assembly endorsed the declaration proposed by France and Saudi Arabia, calling for a two-state solution to the crisis in Israel-Palestine. The measure effectively recognizes a Palestinian state and was passed with an overwhelming majority of votes, 142 for, 10 against. Numerous former stalwart Israeli allies backed the measure, including Germany, indicating a growing interest in a two-state solution. U.S. and Israeli diplomats are painting the vote as a diplomatic victory for Hamas and are insisting that such declarations harm the prospect of peace. While these diplomats tie today's vote to Hamas, the consensus is that Hamas will be eliminated or greatly diminished while the civilian Palestinian Authority takes control of a sovereign Palestine. Today's vote illustrates the global support for ending the war with two states, an ending Netanyahu's government refuses to compromise on. From WPFW and WBAI, I'm Noah Portner.
In related news, two senior Democratic senators have accused Israel of pursuing a policy of ethnic cleansing in Gaza with direct complicity from the United States. Following a recent fact-finding mission to the Middle East, Senators Chris Van Hollen and Jeff Merkley spoke at a press conference yesterday to release their findings in a stinging report. This is Senator Van Hollen.
As you saw, our conclusion is not only that the Netanyahu government is committing ethnic cleansing in Gaza, but the United States is complicit. We're complicit because we have effectively given the Netanyahu government a blank check. No restrictions, no red lines. And the Trump administration has therefore facilitated this. We were both critical of the previous administration for not doing enough. So the United States has the kind of leverage as a partner to be able to use our influence to end this war and bring the hostages home. I mean, after all, on the campaign trail, Donald Trump said on day one he was going to end the war in Gaza. He hasn't come close.
In more news, the suspect in Tuesday's killing of conservative activist Charlie Kirk has been identified as Tyler Robinson. The 22-year-old Utah resident was taken into custody last night. According to Utah Governor Spencer Cox, one of Robinson's family members reached out to a family friend who then contacted authorities. And in a landmark case, former right-wing Brazilian president Jair Bolsonaro has been convicted on a litany of crimes, including attempted assassination in an attempt to cause a coup. Again, here's WPFW's Noah Portner.
Bolsonaro has already been attacked by the legal establishment. In 2023, he was found to have completely fabricated allegations of election fraud and was banned from running for office for a decade. But this verdict is far more severe. 27 years and 3 months in prison looks like a life sentence for the 70-year-old statesman. On January 8, 2023, Bolsonaro's supporters stormed the Brazilian capital at his behest, causing major property damage. Bolsonaro apparently entered into a seditious plan to assassinate the incumbent president currently, as well as Alexandre de Moraes, the Supreme Court justice who presided over Bolsonaro's trial. Bolsonaro's party, which involves his sons, supports him, but other conservative parties